thing.
Just welcome back and
Just welcome back. And let's see, we were just, let's see, we are approximately halfway through at the end of 200.
sorry about that. Yeah, there's quite a few recommended changes for 19,300, but there's not much more after that. So I'd say we're about halfway once we get through this section.
Yeah. Just a quick kind of census here of how many would like to just at the end of 200, and then we can pick this up at the next meeting. Okay. Yeah. That'll work.
Just one quick aside. Can someone let Colin in? He just looks like he's locked out outside the.
No. That's his background.
Oh, that was a joke. Okay.
Nettery's got a heck of an office.
Apologize. I had car trouble on the way here, so I meant to be there. So this is my best.
Okay.
Before we move forward, I wanted to clarify the initial motion that was made. If we need to amend it, then maybe we can do that. But are you saying that you agree with the March 8th draft in addition to the changes to this matrix unless otherwise revised? Because I don't think the motion was very clear, and I wanted to make sure that that was understood.
Well, usually what we've done in the past is bring an initial motion to adopt the entire code as presented by staff and then have the changes. I don't think that first motion was ever made.
No, we went right to by paragraph.
Adopting by paragraph, that is the overall motion. So you're right. But we just wanted to be clear because it states the changes as recommended by staff and amended by the Planning Commission. But I think what Kathleen is saying is that these changes that are being run through tonight are not the entirety of the changes in the March 8th draft. These are in addition to those changes or that are informed by the comments. So we just wanted to make it very clear that the draft is as a whole, and then this breaks it down further. So if everyone is understanding that, then I think we're okay.
What we're agreeing to here should be the final product, right? Or is there more that we're not even talking about?
There were changes in the March 8th draft that are not in this matrix. That's what I'm saying. So these are just based on the comments and changes to the March 8th draft based on those comments. Right. So there are other changes, red line, strikeout, underline, in the March 8th draft that are not in this matrix because they weren't affected by the comments.
So how do we pick those up?
We sent the original out, I think in March,
right?
We received a marked up CAO.
Right, which is why I wanted to make sure that at the beginning of this session today, making sure that if there were items that were not addressed in this matrix that you had concerns about in the March 8th draft, that we can address them at this time. But this was just to help us move through the code.
Right.
And addressing public comment.
Yeah, I think I need to go back and look at the March 8th, but we've got time for next time.
Yeah, we have. You can refresh your review, and if there is an issue, you can bring it up at that time.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's go ahead and finish this one off.
Okay, ready to move on then. We got moving on to 19200. We're in 220C1A and 1B. There was a comment to clarify that when buffer averaging is proposed, that no further buffer reductions are may be approved. That has always been the policy. That's always been the way it's worked, but we could clarify that. So we could say that the use of buffer averaging to type one, maintaining 100% of the buffer, and then only when buffer averaging is not feasible, a type one administrative critical area buffer reduction. Just to clarify that process, again, it's not a change to how it is applied today.
Okay.
That same section, C2A and 2B. There were two separate criteria for this buffer reduction. One was about meeting known at loss, and then another one said as greater, greater. So they were kind of duplicative, trying to say the same standard. So that proposal then it would be to separate those out and remove the duplicative language about no net loss because it's already included in the previous criteria. That averaging clearly provide as greater, greater functions and values as would be provided under the standard buffer and not adversely impact the wetland. You know, it's effectively saying the same thing as B, which is meeting no net loss.
Okay. All right.
So this is where, this is a section we talk about the wildlife corridors, habitat corridors. One of the recommendations was to have a wider 300-foot wildlife corridor. Comment to that being, the response to that being that that would significantly reduce the number of locations where these habitat corridors could be established. As most properties, you wouldn't have authority over widths that size, as we already talked about this evening. So again, no proposed change there.
All right.
220C7, clarification needed on a type 2 administrative process and how it's different than a type 1 ministerial or administrative and type 3 variance. So it is correct that there a ministerial is typically one that does not involve that discretion. However, it kind of looks like we might need to change some of the language in 2104 rather than in Title 19. So the way this it's written in the CAO is correct that the type 1 and 2 are both administrative. And so the only thing that we could potentially clarify this a little bit, when we talk about the cannot meet variance. So a variance is in cases where proposed development cannot meet the type one buffer averaging or the administrative buffer reduction criteria or the type two administrative buffer reduction criteria. So just saying they're both administrative, but we're going to call them both out. Hopefully that gets at, I think Commissioner Shattuck, your comment at the beginning about the policies, this is trying to get at where those would be applied.
All right.
Okay. In 19200-220, there's Table F, which is a list of minimization measures that one could use for minimizing impacts to wetlands. There were some concerns with light, noise, and runoff measures. So to be clear, this table represents examples of measures to minimize and are directly from the Department of Ecology guidance. So part of demonstrating mitigation sequencing is just explaining what is being done to minimize. So no changes are proposed. It's a list of examples, effectively.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, 19200-220D1, this is our section on fencing. We've received multiple comments about the impacts of the silt fencing could have on amphibians and movement between wetland systems. I think it would be prudent to add some language for protection of amphibians in these situations. So what we could do here, we talk about fences may be used to prevent encroachment on wetlands or buffers by construction, but such fences must allow for the movement of amphibians and small animals. And we have some additional language as we move on in 19700 about how to do that. And there's a myriad of ways one could go about doing that. You can create little steps with the straw bales. There's overlaps you can do so you're still protecting, but there's a little bit of an opening in the silt fence for those animals. So we just wanted to acknowledge that and say you're going to use these fences, but we need to allow for some movement of small animals. So
okay.
We did section on pesticides. This hasn't really changed much. The current exemption for pesticide use was noted to be too broad, that pesticides should be a technique of last resort. I think our existing language references a lot of the federal and state protections and the processes required. So again, there's no change there. However, the proposed moving this existing language in the wetlands chapter was only found under utilities, which is not, it obviously applies to much more than utilities. And in our Fish and Wildlife Habitat Conservation Area chapter, it is its own standalone thing. So we want to make sure that's the case with wetlands. So that's what the proposed change would be here.
All right.
Okay. The comment was to include the same provision for land use and subdivision in 19200 as provided for in the same section for 19300. And that would be that, scroll over here. In order to avoid the creation of non-conforming lots, each new lot shall contain at least one building site, etc. So this is the same language, again, that we have in our Fish and Wildlife chapter for land use and subdivision. That at some point inadvertently perhaps was left out of this chapter. Otherwise, the two sections are identical.
Okay.
Okay. All right, and then the last one we have for 19200 was in 230E3, to consider that if mitigation is approved at the state or federal level, allow approval at the county level. So the alternatives for mitigation section here does actually provide include consideration of state or federal approved alternatives. So, you know, concurrent review with all involved agencies is always going to be ideal, not always possible, but it's ideal to allow for that collaboration discussion of appropriate mitigation measures that would be approved by all agencies at all levels of government, as well as allow that SEPA process to incorporate the appropriate plans without having to go back and do SEPA revision. So this, however, it's a policy decision and it's not directed by code or legislation. So we're not proposing any changes to have one level of government take precedence over the other or must have one before the other. But again, our code already addresses the consideration of alternative mitigation plans.
Okay.
Okay. And that's the end of 19200.
Okay. I think unless I hear objection, I think we can, is it table?
Just be continued.
Continue. Mm-hmm. For continuance at our next meeting. So with that brings us to the general public comment period. Mr. Dottie?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you very much. One brief comment regarding delineations. Someone commented about the not wanting to do it during the growing season, and I concur, but for a different reason. Temporary ponds and intermittent streams, that is, fishless bodies of water, are the life's blood of amphibian reproduction. They need to be identified when they're wet. That would be during the winter and very early spring. They shrink during the growing season. This makes them too easy to ignore. Second, I have one real quick question regarding pesticide use. I know this is provisions are coming over in very tiny print, and I may have missed something. But I note that pesticide use is disallowed in wetlands. But what about in the buffers of the wetlands? Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay, and let me bouncing through my screens here. Beth Nichols or Doug Heyman?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Thank you so much, Planning Commission, for taking your responsibility for decision-making regarding the CAOs seriously. Your wider vision is needed to ensure that we have healthy land and water in Kitsap and smart growth that doesn't destroy the quality of life here. From the standpoint of water quality and wildlife, many of these provisions are only moderate to actually inadequate. They are not radical at all, just a very bare minimum. We absolutely need to ensure that our environment is protected, our forests, water quality and quantity, wildlife habitat, and rural areas serve crucial functions that serve us all. We cannot allow out-of-control development that destroys the beauty and the health here. Thank you so much for really giving thought to this important deliberation.
All right, thank you. And David B.
Hello, thank you, commissioners, for all your discussion. There's been so much so many good questions and stuff tonight to staff with regards to the overall CAO report that was, it's being given very well. I appreciate all of the efforts that staff and the CAO groups have put into putting this together. And I just wanted to read a really quick thing. That's how I feel about a lot of the critical areas and one of the most important things that they provide for us. Clean year-round fresh water is more critical than ever in a changing climate. Kitsap County is currently blessed to have a clean and consistent freshwater supply that a vast majority of the world's population could only dream of. Kitsap's critical areas are even more critical to our county as they slow and store rainwater that replenishes our aquifers. As the county grows, our aquifers are the only source of drinking water for our citizens. We are one of only four counties in Washington State that does not have surface water sources for our water needs. I thank you for considering our critical area buffers that provide so many benefits to our property owners and the citizens. And thanks for your time today.
All right, thank you. And let me and I don't see any other comments at this time, so I'll close this period.
If I could just ask real quick, for David, can you spell your last name for us? Or did you just want to leave? We could just leave it at V.
Oh, no, I can. All right. Am I unmuted now?
Yes.
Okay, it's a Vliet.
Oh.
And I'm an unincorporated Kitsap County outside of the Kingston UGA.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. That brings us to any of the, for the good of the order, or commissioner comments at this time.
I just want to say how much I appreciate the discussion. It's a deeper dive into critical area ordinances. I always feel like I'm the new kid on the block, still learning the lingo and the verbiage, but I really want to recognize the expertise and the patience of the staff in answering our questions and allowing us discussion time around this really important language changes. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Mr. Dieter.
Good evening. My name is Scott Dieter. I'm manager of Planning and Environmental Programs for Kitsap County DCD. I'm sure you're all aware that there's a lot of change going on in DCD right now. Both the director and assistant director positions are vacant. We've had a fairly high turnover rate, but in talking with other jurisdictions, not extraordinarily high compared to some other places. There just is not a lot of planners available these days. But one of the things that we began to focus on some months ago is looking at our permit review processes. So with, I'm sure everybody's heard of Senate Bill 5290, which requires jurisdictions to comply with timeframes, 60, 100, and 170 days, respectively, calendar days, for type 1, 2, and 3 decisions. And so and then that's going to be in place by January 1. So we're working hard on that. And basically, the first thing we're trying to do is understand the legislation, because it gives you some back doors to some of this. And, you know, the penalties for not meeting those timeframes are a 20% refund to the permit. But if you've got certain actions in place, like your special revenue fund, your fees are tied to your staffing, and a host of other items out of a list of 10, then you can walk that back a little bit. In any case, we're going to be taking a look at 5290 pretty hard. Again, it's effective January 1. We plan on meeting those timeframes. And the other thing that's going on right now is we hired a process efficiency expert, Kurt Lattimore of Lattimore Company, who works with different jurisdictions going on 20 years now, south, north, east, west, on processing efficiencies. And Dave Kinley knew him through work that he did in Gig Harbor for the city there. And basically what he does is he breaks down what are the inefficiencies that he sees in jurisdictions and what efficiencies can they gain from taking a look at their processes, basically going through a process improvement, Lean Six Sigma, Kaizen, maybe not quite a full Kaizen process, but mapping the current state and then mapping out what your desired state, your dream state would look like. A report was given to the Board of County Commissioners yesterday, and I would encourage you to look at that. We'll send out a link to that meeting, but it talks about a very engaging and complicated process. One of the most exciting things that came out of working with Kurt is that he was a part of what's called the Epic Map development in Cowlitz County. And if you go to their website and look for their maps, you'll see that they've got a map that if you click on any parcel, it'll pull up attributes to that parcel, what he's calling green, yellow, and red. So if it pulls up green, you're good to go. There's nothing to be concerned about. If you pull up yellow, you might have some environmental features to work on. And if it shows red, then you definitely need to come in and talk to the county about what's going on that property. So it provides a really good way for people to do their due diligence in purchasing properties, especially for people who like to purchase property sight unseen. Which does happen, but also for realtors, developers, landowners, neighbors, to understand what's going on their property and around their property. So we've got good GIS staff that's working on making that map a reality. That map was created with federal funds after Mount St. Helens blew and Cowlitz was in need of some economic assistance. And so Kurt Lattimore was a part of that project. So that's one of the first deliverables we're going to see, but he's also promoting what's called 2x6, which is 2 reviews in 6 weeks for our type 2s and type 3s. We're looking at what's called a 2x4, which is 2 reviews in 4 weeks each for our type 1 residential building permits. So those are the goals that we're looking at. Trying to think if there's anything else I missed, but there's a whole menu of things that we're looking at. And he breaks this down in about an hour and 10-minute presentation to the board yesterday. But we'll also be coming to the Planning Commission at key opportunities. Yesterday's meeting was really to get the board educated on what they're looking at and to look for, and to give them opportunity to think about what we're doing and then provide direction, what they want to see occur first. But right now, the leadership of that is on three managers with David Lynham, the fire marshal, as acting director at this time. And we're hoping to get interviews underway later on this month for a director position. And then once that director is on board, then we'll be looking at getting assistant director interviews underway with the director's involvement in that. The Board of County Commissioners has taken a really unique, but I think proactive step in asking staff to be involved in some of the questions that they would like to see asked of a potential director. So we're gathering those questions and we're going to, you know, we can't ask all the questions that everybody would like us to, because it's only an hour and, you know, that gets you 10 good questions at best. But asking staff to be involved in that. And then myself and the other leadership team are all part of a technical review board for the potential director positions, all day. I'm trying to remember, I think that's on the 17th, I believe, maybe. Anyways, so that's it's been really refreshing to see the board and the county administrator involve staff in a way that we had not been involved in prior director selections before. They will then take the next step and make the hard decisions themselves with more narrative questions. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of update and let you know that we'll be coming back before you at key intervals of this process, which it's going to take some time. We got high turnover rates. We're continually fighting that. And you'll see a slide that shows in the presentation that shows 65% of our staff is new to DCD in the last 18 months. If you fold in staff that have been moved around within DCD, promoted within, it's a little less, but it's a pretty high turnover rate, but I've heard from other counties that are experiencing 70% turnover rates. So it's a constant struggle. So anyways, I just wanted to share this with you.
Thank you for that update.
Yeah.
All right.
I was going to just say, I was relieved. I thought you were going to say you were going to speed up permitting by letting us do some of the review. But,
hey, we take volunteer, we take interns, whatever you want to do. Come on board.
I'm not sure that's
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right.
Girls.
Unless I hear any objection, I will.
Commissioner Soler has her hand raised.
I just want to really appreciate all of the comments that public has and everybody involved here, because, you know, really good critical area ordinance offers not just what we're doing inland. I do a lot of marina lease renewals for the DNR, recall, you know, which we're working on right now for Bremerton. We're working on for the Port Orchard and just areas, Sinclair Inlet areas. You know, and what we're doing here now really is important because we have a lot of coastal and marine environments that are here, and the upland critical areas and all the ecosystems really does affect our water quality down here when we're trying to deal with what people are doing in their boats and their boathouses, all the pollution reduction and sediment control and, you know, the state shoreline stabilities and all of our ecosystems. So I just want to thank you for not just thinking about the fish going upstream, but what we're doing to the aquatic life and all of our marine environments. I think it's just as important. It's a whole circle. So I like that we are paying attention to all that. So thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I will close tonight's meeting and we'll be back on the 18th. Good night.
Thank you, everyone.